You're listening to the PGIM India Insights podcast series by PGIM India Asset Management.
Health is Wealth takes on a whole new meaning on today's podcast. Hello and welcome to another episode of PGIM India Insights, everybody. Ahalya here keeping you company as always for a very short while before Ankit Jain takes the reins and leads you into another fascinating conversation about a market phenomenon that we should probably keep our eyes on when it comes to our own personal investor journeys. Now, like I said, Health is Wealth takes on a whole new meaning in today's conversation because we are deep diving into the healthcare market in India and beyond. So buckle up because this is going to be a very in-depth and detailed conversation, but a very insightful one as always. Ankit, over to you.
Thanks, Alia. Indians are known to supply medicines to the world. In fact, our COVID vaccine Maitri initiative was very well recognized across the globe. In spite of having to serve such a large population, we gave to the world 235 million COVID vaccine doses across 98 countries. Welcome to PGIM India Insights. You are listening to Ankit Jain and I have with me Ananda Padmanabhan, Senior Fund Manager of PGIM India Mutual Fund, who will take us through healthcare sector. Hi, Ananda.
Hi, Ankit.
So, Ananda, can you take us through a top-down view of healthcare industry, what it comprises of, what all segments are there?
Sure, Ankit. So one way of classifying the healthcare sector is based on services versus manufacturing. So on the services part of the healthcare sector, this include businesses like pharmacy, retail, diagnostics, and hospitals. On the manufacturing side, it is spread across custom research and manufacturing services, medical devices, formulations, and active pharma ingredients, which is popularly called as APIs. Now, these businesses could be domestic as well as exports. So those are the ways in which one can look at this sector.
Okay, so healthcare also does servicing and also manufactures, you know, like I spoke of vaccines and medicines.
Correct. So if you look at on a top-down basis, if you just look at the India healthcare opportunity or the healthcare spending in India, approximately 60% of the spending would be comprised by hospitals. Pharma formulations contribute around 20% of the spending. Diagnostics contribute 10% of the spending. And rest is comprised of healthcare devices and others.
Okay. So if you look at the growth landscape for Indian companies operating in healthcare industry, how do you evaluate them?
Okay. Let's take up each segment separately. Let's start with hospitals. Or the healthcare delivery industry, as it's popularly called, it is a 5.5 to 6 trillion INR industry in terms of size. And historically, it has grown at a CAGR of 10 to 12%. And that is the rate at which it is expected to grow. Within that, if you look at the breakup, the contribution of private healthcare providers is going to increase, that is, they are going to grow faster than the overall underlying growth of the healthcare sector. Next, moving to formulations. So formulations can classify it into domestic formulations and export formulations. Within the export formulations piece, US generic is one of the largest piece in that. And for most of the companies operating in this segment, India domestic formulation plus US generic business contribute more than 50% of their overall revenues. If you look at the generic formulations opportunity, US is one of the key markets for US generic formulations. And if you look at the overall market size, that is close to $80 billion, where the growth of this market is led by volumes with more and more patented drugs going generic. But at the same time, there is a counterbalancing factor of generic price erosion, where the price of those drugs come down every year. On the domestic formulations piece, domestic formulations is a 1.8 trillion INR opportunity, which is growing at 10 to 11%, which further comprises of chronic formulations versus acute formulation. So these are the key parts or key opportunities on the formulation side. Coming to the third piece of the healthcare sector, the diagnostics. Diagnostic industry in India is a 800 billion INR opportunity, growing at 8 to 10%. This is a highly fragmented industry with a lot of new players who have been constantly entering in the market. There are very limited barriers to entry. If you look at the market structure today, 44% of the market is held by standalone diagnostic centers. These would be the typical proprietary diagnostic centers that you will find in and around your household. Whereas the organized diagnostics chains, the likes of Dr. Lal Path Labs or Metropolis, these chains cumulatively, if you take all the diagnostics chain cumulatively, they have less than 18% market share. Having said that, this organized diagnostics chains are growing faster. One factor obviously is that there is a higher trust in terms of their test results, and the reports by, say, Dr. Lal or Metropolis typically tend to carry a higher weight amongst the medical community vis-a-vis a local diagnostic center. And the other factor obviously is that these companies have been able to increase their presence across your micro markets through organic or inorganic route. The final piece of the healthcare sector is the CRAMS. Its CRAMS stands for Custom Research and Manufacturing Services. As per some studies, this is a $200 billion US dollar opportunity and is growing at 13%. Here, Indian companies are relatively smaller in the overall scheme of things, but they are rapidly increasing their presence due to factors like ready availability of skilled manpower, rising focus on diversification from China amongst the global pharma companies, which tend to be the key clientele in the CRAMS business. These are the four parts of the opportunity within the healthcare side. And if I have to summarize this, most of these opportunities are growing in excess of 10%, with good players or the private players have a potential to grow much faster than the broader market.
Sure. So as you rightly said, that most of them are actually growing at 10% and expected to grow, you know, either that or
better. Underlying market opportunity itself is growing at 10% plus. Apart from US generics, the underlying opportunity is not growing fast. In fact, it has more or less remained stagnant in the last couple of years. Except for US generics, all the other opportunities are, the underlying market is growing at more than 10%, and typically the players tend, if you look, they tend to outperform the broader market.
Sure. So, Ananda, you gave a good top-down cover of, you know, what are the, you know, various segments within healthcare. Now, if, you know, we want to understand some of these in details, if you can talk about, you know, how the business models of hospitals are.
So hospitals, as I said earlier, in the Indian healthcare spending, if you look at the overall healthcare spending in India, the major chunk of this spending is cornered by the hospital segment. Hospital industry in India can be classified into primary, secondary, tertiary, and quaternary care centers, with primary being the most basic center, whereas quaternary being the most specialized center. Bulk of the hospitals would form under secondary or tertiary care. If you look at the overall business of hospitals, they generate business from inpatients and outpatients. Inpatients are nothing but patients who stay overnight in the hospital for treatments. Outpatients are patients who come to hospital and are discharged the very same day. Typically, inpatients or IPD contribute 70% of their revenue and outpatients contribute 30% of their revenue. Major source of revenues for hospitals is surgeries and diagnostics, with surgery yielding the highest revenue per bed. Hospitals specializing in complex specialties or having a better patient mix, for example, having foreign patients, tend to achieve higher revenue per bed. And the overall revenue generating potential of the hospital is driven by their case mix. What is the kind of surgeries that they do? What is the patient mix? Whether they have more government scheme-led patients, they have more insurance patients, or they have more foreign patients, or whether they have more cash-paying patients? What is the location? A hospital located in a micro market like Delhi or Gurgaon will typically tend to have a higher revenue per bed, vis-a-vis a hospital that would be located in tier 3 or tier 4 centers would have a lower revenue per bed. And also the kind of doctors that the hospitals have on their board. Typically, a very renowned doctor will tend to command higher fees vis-a-vis a doctor who does not have the adequate kind of experience.
Sure. So you're saying that, you know, within hospitals also, the ones who are at a good location, who has specializing in complex specialities, generally tend to earn more. And that is how, you know, the average revenue per bed is higher for such hospitals.
Yes.
So, if you look at the kind of population India has, how is the penetration of hospitals across the country today?
So, it's a very interesting question, Ankit. So, India has 20% of the global population. But if you look at the total bed availability per 1,000 people, bed penetration is just 1.5. The WHO recommended guideline is 3.5. So if India needs to meet this WHO recommended penetration of 3.5 beds per 1,000 persons, then it would need to add over 3 million beds over the next couple of years. Achieving this would not be that easy, given that bulk of this contribution will have to come from the private sector. And also one needs to take into account that most of the hospital beds in India are present on tier 1 and tier 2 towns, whereas bulk of the population lives in rural areas. So if I have to give a breakup, 70% of the hospital beds would be in urban centers, whereas if you look at the populations, it would be the other way around, where only 30% of the population would be located in urban centers. So in India, it's quite common for someone staying in tier 1 or tier 2, tier 3 or tier 4 cities to travel to the nearby metro location for taking a treatment.
Sure. I mean, I was shocked to hear that number, that Indians have only 1.5 bed per 1,000, whereas the WHO guideline itself is 3.5. And as per what you said, that, you know, it's quite possible that in the next many years, I mean, maybe 4, 5, 6 years, this number is achievable, because we need to add almost 3 million beds.
Correct. So the scope for growth is quite high in the sector, in case you have the adequate capital and you have the capability of setting up centers with the right specification at the right space.
So, Ananda, also I wanted to understand, we've been hearing a lot about, you know, India is emerging as one of the medical tourism destination in the world. So can you highlight what is this medical tourism all about?
Sure, Ankit. Simply put, traveling internationally for medical care is called as medical tourism. If you look at India, India has ranked 10th in medical tourism index for 2020-2021 out of 46 destinations in the world as per Medical Tourism Association. There are a couple of key factors that drive it. One is that the quality of treatment coupled with presence of technologically advanced hospital with highly experienced and specialized doctor available at a reasonable discount to what is there in various other global countries or cities, and easy availability of travel visas and other facilities related to travel. These are the key factors that drive medical tourism. From a hospital perspective, typically these medical tourists who come to India, these are tourists who come for more high-end procedures. That would be the typical case mix of people who tend to travel for medical tourism. And most of the hospitals are able to charge a premium from these patients. So if you talk to hospitals and if you try to understand the kind of realization per bed that they have from foreign tourists, you'll find that the realization per bed is at a sharp premium to the realization that hospitals get from their domestic patients.
So, in fact, in spite of charging 2x of what they are charging to domestic patients, still the cost is much cheaper compared to their home country, and that is what you know would want them to come to India, you know, to do their surgeries.
True. So there are a couple of things. Once you say 2x, there are a couple of things that you have to take into account. When you look at the domestic average realization per bed, that would be spread across multiple procedures. That would be spread across routine plus high-end procedures. Whereas foreign tourists will be focused on high-end procedures. So if you have to think intuitively, a person traveling to a different country for a medical treatment, it would be a scenario where it is very critical and it tends to be a little more high-end kind of a treatment. Only then a patient would be desperate to travel to other country for a treatment. So typically the case mix inherently tends to be much superior. That also drives the premium. Plus, obviously, hospitals tend to charge a little more premium on foreign patients.
Sure, I understand what you're saying, that, you know, generally a foreigner would not come to an India for a flu. It would definitely be for a surgery, which is a critical surgery.
Correct.
So, Ananda, you spoke about healthcare at length on one of the sub-segments. Also, we can cover one more sub-segment, which is pharma. How are the pharma companies doing now?
So if you look at the pharma companies, US generics plus domestic formulations, as I told earlier, form more than 50% of the revenue for most pharma companies. If you look at the recent year gone by, calendar year 2023, that has been a good year for all the domestic pharma companies. So on the domestic side, this company saw reversal of headwinds in terms of cost and continuing strength in terms of their earnings. So if you look at this pharma companies, the domestic piece that saw RM prices starting to come off, companies were able to take some price hikes based on the regulatory parameters allowed by NLEM. And on the other side, on the US generic piece, 2023 saw reversal of the high generic price erosion that one had seen in the previous year. So CY22 saw a very high double-digit price erosion for most companies in their US generic business. CY23 actually saw that price erosion coming off to low to mid-single digits. Coupled with that, there were a couple of one-off big product-specific opportunities across many companies, which also added to the tailwind for US generic business growth. So on an overall basis, in the year gone by, we saw pharma companies, the growth coming back, the margins expanding, resulting in a good amount of re-rating for most of the pharma companies.
Sure. So what we've been hearing for the last 4-5 years that, you know, US market, there is a pricing pressure that is kind of subsiding, and eventually we are hoping that, you know, that will completely subside in the years to come.
So it's a bit too early to say in terms of the reversal or the US price erosion coming off, whether it's a structural or a cyclical thing. So there are a couple of factors that has led to a low US price erosion. So in 2022, because of very high US price erosion, a lot of companies saw their margins getting impacted, as a result of which quite a few companies decided to withdraw low margin products from their basket, from their product basket. At the other end, you had some regulatory issues with some key facilities. For example, Intas had a bad FDA inspection, which resulted in their plants receiving import alert by US FDA. You had some instances of players like Acon filing for bankruptcy. All these factors led to a sudden shortage across multiple drugs, which in turn resulted in lower price erosion. So suddenly the focus shifted from low price to a focus on ready availability of drugs. This resulted in a better pricing environment. Having said that, the structural factors like supply side consolidation in US, those factors still remain. So it's too early to say whether this would be a structural phenomena or this will be more of a cyclical phenomena, which could reverse in the next couple of quarters. But having said that, if I have to just look at the near-term expectations based on the commentary by various domestic formulation companies focused on US generics market, it seems to suggest that at least in the near term, the pricing environment will remain relatively favorable in US generic business.
Sure. So the commentary is at least good from them. Also, Ananda, one important factor has been that in the last 7-8 years, there have been a lot of US FDA issues which cropped up. It started from 2014-15 onwards. So correct. Are those issues behind us now?
So when we look at US FDA related issues, one have to look at the broader picture. Outside of US, India has the largest number of US FDA approved generic formulation manufacturing facilities. No other country has as many generic formulation manufacturing facilities outside of US as much as India has. So from that perspective, the FDA action generally in India would tend to be higher. But if you look at the broader picture, over the years, if you look at the most of the Indian pharma companies, they have been steadily been able to improve their GMP standard. GMP stands for good manufacturing practices. Having said that, this US FDA at the other end has also been steadily raising the requirements with respect to the GMP standards. That's the reason why, in spite of companies improving their practices, you still find news flows of companies coming under the US FDA scanner. But if you look at the top-down picture, if you look at CY 2023, the total number of warning letters or regulatory issues raised by US FDA, the total number of such letters issued by US FDA, India contributed around 15%, that is 15% of the total warning letter issued by US FDA in 2023. If you look at the total contribution of India in terms of manufacturing facility, it is 22%. So simply put, India contributes 22% of the total market, total US drug manufacturing, at the other end, it contributed 15% of the warning letter received. So from that perspective, its performance is relatively better. If you look at the other way around, if you look at the total number of inspection that took place in India in 2023, less than 10% of those inspections resulted in an adverse outcome like warning letter or import alert. So from that perspective also, you find that the overall US FDA related issue or the compliance standards of India has steadily been improving. What happens is that only cases where it results in an adverse outcome gets highlighted in the media, but the inspection that happens smoothly and it gets completed smoothly doesn't get highlighted in the media. From a listed space companies, which are in the listed space, over the years, the larger players have de-risked that facility-specific risk with respect to US generic business by ensuring that their key products have filing from multiple facilities, so that even if one facility comes under the scanner, the supply does not get impacted. That's the reason why if you look at companies like Sun Pharma or Cipla, which have multiple of their facilities under US FDA warning letter, in spite of these facilities being under warning letter, they have still been able to grow their US generic business. So that's the way one has to look at this.
Sure. So over the years, the number of warning letters has only reduced. The facilities have also improved their standards, which is overall helping these companies, you know, to not be worried about what used to happen maybe 5-7 years back when, you know, an FDA warning letter used to come.
Correct. So they have become more of a part of a routine business risk that where companies have tried to de-risk this routine business risk.
Sure. So lastly, you know, Ananda, you've almost covered everything from the healthcare sector, but I wanted to know, you know, our listeners would love to know that what is PGM view on the overall healthcare sector?
We are positive on the space and maintain an overweight stance on the healthcare sector across all our portfolios. Our exposure to the healthcare sector is spread across hospitals, diagnostics, formulation, and CRAMS, with hospitals forming a major chunk of the overall exposure. One of the reasons why we are very positive on the hospital space is that hospital is seeing tailwinds in terms of enhanced awareness, focus on health post-COVID, increased penetration of health insurance, which in turn drives demand for high-quality healthcare, and steady improvement in case mix across all hospital chains. If I have to just give corollary, so if you look at US market and if you look at the overall healthcare inflation in US over the past decade, the overall healthcare inflation in US over the past decade would be much higher than the broader inflation of the economy. This is a similar trend that we have already started seeing in India as well, and we expect this trend to continue. If I have to give a perspective, so 10 years back or 15 years back, if I have to get a bypass surgery done, I would have spent anywhere between 1.5 to 2 lakhs. Today, the same procedure, cost of that procedure would be at least 5 to 6 lakhs, if not more. So that is the kind of healthcare inflation that we have seen in India. And part of it is because the ability of people to play. Part of it is also because of the technology innovation that have happened in the overall healthcare space. So coming to the other piece where we have a good exposure is on the formulations, mix of both domestic as well as US generic businesses. So the key drivers for the domestic formulation business is rising household income, increased incidence of lifestyle related diseases, enhanced awareness and focus on health post-COVID. These are the key structural drivers for domestic formulations. Coupled with that, the recent trend of falling RM prices could provide a tailwind to the margins for these companies in the near quarters. US generic formulations is again other business that we have exposure to in the portfolio. This again is seeing benefit from cyclical factors like falling US generic price erosion with the factors that I've already explained earlier in terms of rationalization of tail portfolios by larger MNC players, exit of few players because of regulatory issues or financial issues. These are leading to a cyclical uptick or cyclical tailwind to the US generic businesses, and we have exposure to this business through a couple of our portfolio companies. The other pieces that we have exposure to is diagnostics and CRAM space, the custom research and manufacturing services space. On the diagnostic side, they had a difficult last year because of low volume growth in the non-COVID businesses, coupled with a pricing pressure due to newer players who had entered into the segment. We see both of these factors reversing with the non-COVID business growth or volume growth recovering and the pricing environment becoming a little more favorable due to improving competitive landscape on the diagnostic space. On the CRAMS and CDMO space, companies benefit from healthy underlying growth in the pharma R&D outsourcing, rising focus by global pharma companies for de-risking their exposure in China. So these are structural factors that will drive the growth of these companies. Having said that, in the near term, we feel that there could be some near-term headwinds in form of biotech funding stress in developed markets because of the rising interest and high interest rate environment, which could lead to some headwinds for these companies in the near term. So these are the key exposures that we are having in the healthcare space.
Sure. So from an overall perspective, we are bullish even on, from a medium to long-term perspective, bullish on hospitals, CRAMS, formulations, and diagnostics. So thank you, Ananda, for sharing your views on, you know, healthcare. In fact, I would just like to summarize for our listeners that healthcare sector has various components. It has four sub-segments, which is comprises of, you know, formulations, diagnostics, hospitals, and CRAMS. Within that, hospital is one of the biggest, which comprises 60% of the overall, you know, volume of the whole healthcare. And, you know, how medical tourism itself has, you know, building up. We are ranked 10th in terms of medical tourism, where there are people who coming to do critical treatments in India. And because of medical tourism, these hospitals tend to enjoy a little higher margin. And last but not the least, you know, diagnostics. Because of COVID, we've all realized that people have started going out and started to get, you know, their annual health checkups done more, you know, frequent than what earlier it used to be. And that's, you know, on the overall healthcare sector. Ananda, I hope I've summarized pretty well for our listeners.
Yes, Ankit, you have covered all the points.
Thank you. Thank you once again, Ananda. Thanks, everyone, for joining us on PGM India Insights. I will catch you on the next podcast soon.
Thank you, everyone.
You know, I have to say it's interesting to say the least when we talk about healthcare in this particular context. But there you have it. And you know what? I think today's podcast doesn't just serve as a reminder to keep your eyes on the healthcare market, of course, as it promises to grow in India, but also, you know, to take care of your own health. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. And we'll bring you another interesting topic of conversation very soon in our series. But for now, that's a wrap on this episode of PGM India Insights. And that's Mia Halia signing off. Stay safe and stay happy. And of course, happy investing.
Mutual fund investments are subject to market risks. Read all scheme-related documents carefully.
You're listening to the PGM India Insights podcast series by PGM India Asset Management.